The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Welcome to another edition of Mission Minded with Michael Coleman. Michael Coleman, of course, is an expert in the non-for-profit business, and really you can use a lot of those non-for-profit ideas in your for-profit world if you want. It's where we keep our mind and our mission and our mind. Of course, it runs every single Wednesday right here at noon and 7 o'clock on Tony Curry Radio, first run episodes. And then, of course, you go to Spotify. And I know, Michael, you've done that as well. Go to Spotify, search Mission Minded with Michael Coleman or Tony Curry Radio. That's Curry with a K. Make sure you search one of those two. There is a couple of mission-minded podcasts out there. Make sure you get the one with the puzzle piece with Michael Coleman's name on it, and you can go back and listen to as many episodes as you want. And by the way, last week we set a record for the most listens through Spotify through all of our shows, so kudos to all of our listeners, and then they come back to Tony Curry Radio to hear the first run of shows. Michael, how are you doing this week? What's going on, man?
Well, as I say, if I was any better, I'd be twins.
There you go. That's a good thing. Speaking of twins, we're getting more than two. We got 10 to 15 different emails coming in every single week. Not only here from the Birmingham area, we got from Sylacauga. We have one from Austin, Texas coming in here. Go to TonyCurryRadio.net, TonyCurryRadio.net, become a bonehead, and you can leave your email questions, and we'll get to them. And that's taken off as well, so we'll get into those emails in just a few minutes. But you wanted to share some words of wisdom to kick off this episode of Mission Minded. What you got, man?
Yeah, there's so much stuff out there, and most of it is pretty good, but sometimes something just hits me between the eyes, and it's usually because it's something that I'm not doing very well. And so I heard a guy say that when you're bringing your eyes, when you're bringing your ideas around the table with your staff. So this could be at the top at CEO level, or it could be at the management level. But if you're in charge of people and you're bringing an idea in front of them, he said it's very important to wait until the end of hearing everybody else before you give your opinion. And I said, well, I've done that before, but I've also been very guilty of something he says, be careful you don't do, which is as people are going around the table expressing their thoughts and giving their creative energy, you can have a tendency to agree with certain statements, like nod your head up and down or to shake your head side to side. And so that can end up swaying people. And so I thought how guilty I am of that. He said there's two real reasons for it. One is, if you put an idea out there and then you go around the table and you make sure everybody gives an opinion before you give any sort of idea what your thoughts on it, then it's encouraging people to speak and that they feel heard. Then you get into the psychology of all that, what that means and how that goes towards job satisfaction when people feel heard at work or that their opinion really matters. And so I just thought that was something that I need to personally work on. And then also he said, the second reason it's so important is you get a lot of good ideas. You get a lot of additions to the idea. You get a lot of sharpening of the idea from the people. So it's a twofold effect. Your idea is going to get better and your people are going to feel more engaged and more valued as team members. And I thought, well, I've gathered my team around, my senior leaders, quite often and said, hey, I'm thinking about this. I'd like to know your thoughts. But I've already got in my head really kind of what I want to do. And I've been very guilty of, as people express their ideas, I nod in agreement. Mm-hmm. People express their ideas that I'm like, no, that's not what I'm looking for. And I shake my head side to side without really considering the effect of that. And so he was just really good. And he said, it sounds very simple, but it's incredibly difficult. And I'm here to say it's incredibly difficult for me to be able to just listen and hear what my team is saying and to then ask questions to try to understand that perspective, especially perspectives that are different than mine. And so you have to be very intentional when you do that with your staff.
All right, so this is great because this reminds me of how my business started. I have a guy who is a technical wizard, you know, James Michael Keats. He does all my radio programming and everything, and he's a computer whiz. And he has come to me with several different ideas. And I love when people say, listen, just hear me out. Listen to this idea. Normally it has some expenditures tied to it. But I did feel the need early on to, regardless of whether I actually liked his idea, as long as it wasn't too expensive, it was something we could pull off, to allow us to go through with it. Because I didn't know what he was talking about. And I tried to get him to explain exactly what he was talking about. And not to let him hang on his own, because obviously if I'm making the decision for the company based on his ideas, I'm taking ownership. I'm agreeing to that by allowing it to happen. How often do you allow some ideas just to go through? Because I'm sure there's people in every organization. It doesn't just have to be a non-for-profit where they're the idea person. They're always coming in with these bright ideas, these big ideas. And sometimes you kind of scoff at them. You're like, that's crazy. And then there's some ideas that are actually pretty good. How do you deal with people like that? Do you allow them to exercise some ideas once in a while and maybe to fail on purpose?
You have to. And what I have found is because I'm, you know, they call me, yeah, you got a new idea a day. And I tell my staff, the reason it's so important that my staff does get buy-in or that they can speak very openly to me is because I say, listen, just because I come up with a new idea every day doesn't mean it's a good idea every day. And I need your honest feedback. I need your honest assessments to tell me what you think is not effective or will not work, but not just because you don't want to. You have to be able to explain in the framework of what we're doing why you feel like that idea will not produce the results that I'm looking for. And I've traditionally been very open to that, as long as it is not just being, oh, I just don't want to do that, or I don't want to fool with that, or that's going to be hard. Those are not excuses that I accept. I want to hear legitimate, based on my experience, when this happens, then these things tend to happen. And so you could be going down this path. That kind of information is helpful. But I think it's very important that you hear out your employees. You do not want to squelch ideas. Now, I've had people who are idea day kind of guys that I would sit down with them and I would give them a set of boundaries with which to work within. So I would tell them, hey, I love your ideas. I love your thinking. I love how you're thinking towards next steps, but here's where we are right now as a company. Here's the next steps we're going to take. And so it's not that I don't want to hear your ideas or that I want to, or that I don't want to think about them or accept them. It's just right now, these ideas are for down the road. So I don't want to give up on them. I don't want you to forget about them, but I need to hear those about 6 to 8 months from now. So that way they walk away feeling valued, but it's just not something that you've got too many other irons in the fire to really be able to seriously consider that.
And I know people hate them, but I mean, staff meetings, we used to have some amazing staff meetings when I first got here in the radio station. Every Monday at 1 o'clock, we had a staff meeting and people didn't want to do it because a lot of it was, you know, maintenance kind of work and, you know, household stuff that we needed to get through, programming and stuff. But we used to have some great brainstorming ideas. And if anything else, it was just a camaraderie kind of thing where we could all kind of throw some ideas out and brainstorm about some ideas about programming or stunts or imaging or anything else that was really, really good. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman. We keep your mind, your mission on your mind. And of course, it airs every single Wednesday at noon and 7 o'clock. And then of course, a Live Wire Wednesday every Wednesday night, 8 o'clock right after. You see, getting some great Mission Minded stuff and some great classic rock and roll. Go to Spotify, search Tony Curry Radio. That's Curry with a K, and you can listen to all the shows, and also TonyCurryRadio.net, and you can leave emails. You want to knock out some emails?
Absolutely.
All right. Teresa in Sylacauga said she had heard a previous show where you were talking about a 4-day work week. She absolutely loves that idea, and she's kind of flowed that idea around to some of her employees. But she wanted to know if there were any Alabama labor law hoops she needs to jump through, and what can she do to keep the peace if she needs to revert back to a 5-day schedule?
Yeah, so great questions, and I will tell you that what we were able to do is we did not make it mandatory, because what I was trying to do at Jimmy Hill was to say two things. Number one is the idea that, you know, we know it was very expensive, and some people were driving almost an hour away to work, and so you could cut down 20% on their gas cost if they could work 4-day work weeks.
They'd like that now.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, so I tried to give them the flexibility to choose whether to do it or not. So there's no Alabama labor laws other than, you know, you can't work somebody past 40 hours who's non-exempt, that's an hourly employee. Now, if somebody's exempt, then they are, they technically can work as long as you want to because they're on a salary. But no, there's no issues with, you know, nurses do this all the time. They'll work three 12-hour shifts, and then the next week they work four-day shifts and three off or something. And it all totals up to 80 hours in a pay period.
Yeah.
So the bottom line is you have to be mindful of just the normal labor laws. But, no, you can be as flexible with your schedule as you absolutely want to. And then I'll even take it one step further. I really wish we could get to the point that we were not working towards hours, but working towards productivity, measuring a work week by productivity and not by hours. I've been involved before when they say, well, you know, end of the day is 5 o'clock and you're sitting there and it's 2:30 on an afternoon and, you know, the clock's just creeping by and you don't have any projects in front of you or anything that you could really do. And so you're trying to find some busy work, and it's a very demotivating thing. And so there's lots of times I just let my people go an hour early, hour and a half early. If I'm like, hey, you know, if you've worked hard today and you've been very productive and you've knocked out a full day's work and it's an hour and a half early, go home. And people receive that in a very good way, because what they understand is that you're acknowledging they've worked hard all day, and you're not just, you don't just have a pack mule, you're putting another bag on. I'm going to keep loading you down to your knees buckle.
Yeah.
So I would encourage you to get creative. And just along those same lines, for people out there, there's even make up some little cards and like gotcha cards. Like if you catch somebody doing something good or going to extra measure to do something in a positive way, just put a little card on their desk and say, hey, take 2 hours off early, or little things like that. You would just be amazed at how motivated your staff will become when they see that you're acknowledging their hard work and their extra effort and see the impact that they're making.
You, Michael, see a lot of that in sales, and I certainly can use radio sales as an example because I've seen it firsthand, where you have a budget. And if you're reaching your budget within 2 weeks of the month, obviously you want to look busy because you don't want to blow past your budget too far, because you know they're going to come back at you the next month. And really, it's a seasonal type of thing, like a lot of businesses are, because you know if you're reaching 110, 150% of your budget every single month and you're doing it two weeks into it, they're going to start loading you up. Like you said, they're going to pack mule you. And then you're going to get to a point where, quite frankly, you just can't get any higher. And then it's almost like the stock market, when there's expectations based on earnings, and when those earnings don't come in to where you thought they were going to be, your stock goes down, and that happens with salespeople as well. So I can certainly understand where that goes. And consequently, you see a lot of people acting like they're super busy, and they may have already reached their budget a week ago, but they're going to make sure they're still on the phone, they're still looking good, because they want to gradually increase that budget depending on how much money they're making. So I guess.
And I'll tell you this last thing is that I thought was so important is that when people were at me, okay, so they were working 10-hour days, so they're still putting in their 40-hour weeks, but they very quickly got used to having 3 days off every week. Mm-hmm. And when they get used to that, let's say somebody else comes along and they can offer your employee $3,000 more a year, and that employee goes, well, it's a little bit more money, but you know what? I don't have near as much family time. I don't have near as much freedom, culture makes all the difference in the world. And showing them that you're trying to find ways to better their life and that you authentically care about them and you care about their ideas and you want them to be incredibly productive at work, but you want them to have as much family time and you're working towards that. It's hard to lose an employee like that unless somebody comes along and just offers them more money than they
can afford to turn down. They're not typically somebody's not going to pull your employee because they're offering them $2,000 more a year.
True. This is Mission Minded here with Michael Coleman. He is, of course, an expert in the non-for-profit business world. He's been with Jimmy Hale Mission, started his own non-for-profit when he first got started. You'll never know what he's going to be up to next. Bill in Austin, Texas, runs a small NFP. He says he's got 13 employees. It doesn't sound too small to me. But he's always handled their health care and can no longer do it. Starting next year, he wants to know what's the best way to handle that because it's going to cost his employees quite a bit to pick up their own health care. And are there any legal ramifications to that?
There's not. It's my understanding that I think the cutoff is 50, where you have to provide health care of some kind. But I understand what that whole struggle is about. When I very first started a nonprofit, it was just me and one other person. And as we started to grow it, as we got more donors and more sustainable funding, then I just said, hey, it's very important that my staff be able to have health care. It just felt like it was a statement about who we wanted to be. But in the last 2 years, for instance, our Blue Cross Blue Shield went up about 23%. Mm-hmm. And at the Jimmy Hale Mission, we were able to pay 100%. But you have to understand that we're getting to where we had 75 employees, and you're talking about $750 a month for health care for each employee. Yep. So that's not sustainable long term. And I think what I would encourage him to do is to sit down and have an honest conversation about where you are as an organization. I think transparency is very important. I think if your employees trust you and know that you're doing everything you can and you can show them the numbers, that as it continues, yes, I want to keep your health care, but it's going to require us to do an 80-20 split or maybe a 70-30 or maybe even a 50-50. I don't know. But if you show them that there's no alternative, I'm not saying they're not going to be upset. I'm not saying they're not going to be hurt or that they're not going to be frustrated. But I think transparency is just always the best. Just lay it out for them as it is and show them where you are.
I totally agree with you.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and Bill's only got 13 employees, and I've worked with businesses, obviously, with 1,000 employees. I would implore, and most of us have directors at each position, right? We have a program director, we have a sales director. I really like hand-to-hand combat. I like face-to-face stuff. I don't like to read it on an email. If they're sending out an email and you have 6,000 employees, I get that. But I would even say at a local level, sit down and discuss these situations with your employees first, and don't make it sound like we're making the change. This is the way it is. It's not a democratic situation. You're going to have to get over it. And I think a lot of times, because when emails come across our computers, man, that spreads like wildfire. And depending on what kind of player you are, you'll understand why those changes need to be made. But I think it sounds a lot better to be coming from a supervisor saying, listen, you're going to be getting something here soon. We just can't do it anymore. Hope you certainly understand. If you have any questions, come see me. And that seems to work a little bit better, right?
Yo, absolutely. Because here's the deal. It always works best if you're the kind of leader that I think Bill is, which he's obviously writing this question because he's concerned. And so if you sit in front of people and they understand, hey, you're really wrestling with this. This is not a bottom line dollar decision. This is something you're wrestling with, and you're trying to find ways and alternatives to deliver this care for us. And then even if you've got some people who are frustrated or threatened to quit, you give some room for them to be able to express those emotions and not take it personally. And I think after they process, I just think you tell them, hey, you're all valued employees. Now, if you're looking for alternative approaches, then it means cutting back. If you say, well, I've got to keep healthcare, but there's just not enough money. Well, then you've got to go back to your core issues of what you do and figure out and scale that down some, mm-hmm. or find ways to collaborate to reduce other expenses. And that's a whole completely different exercise.
Yeah.
But not knowing the specifics of what Bill does, I don't know that I would have any helpful comments towards that.
We're taking your emails here on the Mission Monday. Go to TonyCurryRadio.net. That's Curry with a K, TonyCurryRadio.net. Become a bonehead and you'll leave your email questions. You can also do that through Spotify, where you can find all of our shows 24 hours a day on demand. Of course, you hear Mission Monday live every Wednesday, first run shows at noon and 7 right here on the Tony Curry Radio app. Carrie in Gulf Shores wants to know, in the wake of the recent mass shootings, what can I do to protect my workforce in the most cost-effective way? She said they run a business. It doesn't say whether it's a non-for-profit, but a business that runs 24 hours a day. She wants to know, is it something that I must provide for her workforce, and is there any liability tied to that, and whether anyone gets hurt? It's a big question, man.
Yeah. Well, I will tell you, there's always liability. We live in an incredibly litigious, dangerous world. And like right now, you're a gun manufacturer. You're being sued because of what happened at Uvalde. Mm-hmm. You're the police force. You're coming under criticism. The school board is going to be criticized. And I'm not saying whether they deserve it or don't deserve it. I'm just stating that's the way it is. But if you're talking about a business and a nonprofit, you have to think through and just do an overall risk assessment. And so we were dealing with some people right off the streets who sometimes were emotionally and mentally unstable. And so we had to be very careful about what they brought onto our property. But we were also trying to balance dignity and not do like they do in jail, where you do cavity searches and things like that. It's very dehumanizing. Mm-hmm. If I will tell you, if you look at the grand scheme of things, the likelihood that somebody is going to come in and hurt your staff is very unlikely. I know it's all over the news right now, but if you think about how prevalent guns are in our society and opportunities are in our society and people with mental health issues are in our society, relatively few businesses are actually impacted by that. But nevertheless, I would recommend that you would approach that through legal means, whether it's, okay, we want to have somebody who's designated. Oftentimes churches do this now, where they have members who are designated, who go through firearms training, safety training, or that's their background. And so it's very quiet. They don't make a big production out of it, but recently somebody shot the pastor at a church, and then church members killed him because the security team was alerted to it. So you do things like have cameras in place, but again, all of that comes with cost. Mm-hmm. And I would also, getting back to the transparency we were just talking about, I would get my staff together and see, do they feel unsafe? You know, look at their parking. Do they work, especially in the wintertime when it gets dark early? Are they concerned about going out to the parking lot? Do they feel vulnerable? Is it not a well-lit area? So you might want to light up your outside. You might want to put cameras inside and out. So there's a lot of little things like that. But of course, all of that comes with dollars. And I don't know how much money you have to spend on those kind of things. But that's just an overall safety plan and just trying to bring as much common sense. But I would get feedback from my employees to see if there are any places they feel vulnerable and then address those on a case-by-case basis.
And certainly if you have a business that's running 24 hours a day, that's certainly something that I would think would be important to a lot of people. Steven Aniston is the president of his own non-for-profit. He said, how do I handle expenditures to help my business grow? Must I get approval for purchases over a certain amount? How does that work with board members? Do you have a CFO? If you have something that you want to do and you're president and you want to go buy, I don't know, something that a lot of people maybe would not acknowledge as something that's important to a business, maybe you want to go and get posters or something to promote something or whatever, or your ideas. How does that work from an expenditure standpoint?
Yeah, so that's all determined inside of each nonprofit. Usually the board of directors, and of course, all nonprofits don't have the wherewithal to have a CFO. And a lot of your very small nonprofits don't need it. You need a bookkeeper, somebody to keep all your financial records, your reporting to the IRS, all those kind of things, and record your expenses. I remember my very first nonprofit, my board established that anything over $1,000 required two signatures on a check from the nonprofit.
Okay.
But your board can establish that. They don't have to have any safeguards like that. But that's really all determining individual nonprofit. So if you're the president of the nonprofit, I would just get with your board so that you don't have to go get every expenditure approved, because that's why you do a budget. I think if the spending is within the category of a budget and it's below the limit, you should not have to get approval for each expenditure. However, if your board requires certain things, or if you're spending money that does not fall up under a normal category, then that's something I usually, just out of courtesy and respect, take before my treasurer or finance committee on my board, just to get their feedback and say, hey, we've got this money. I need to make this purchase. Just want to let you guys know. If you have any thoughts with it or have any concerns about it, you know, let me know.
And I think it's super important, and you know this as well as anybody, that there is if you're wanting to run it right, this is not a bar owner who goes to the cash registers at 3 a.m. every night and just takes all the cash, sticks it in his pocket and splits and doesn't do his books. But I mean, we've seen it I'm using this just because I saw an article on it yesterday, Black Lives Matter, where all of a sudden they're opening their books and they're finding airplane rides and cars and all these things. And whenever you have a movement that is incredibly emotional and very topical and you've got a lot of money pouring in, man, you've got to have someone accounting for every one of those dollars so it's run Absolutely. Correctly. You really do.
Yeah, those kind of things, and this is not I don't want anybody to feel like this is a statement about Black Lives Matter. Any organization.
Yep.
I know that there was even talk about, some people were concerned about the Wounded Warriors when that came out, and that people were flooding money into these organizations. There's always challenges with making sure there's accountability. I will tell you, one of the things that has come up time and time again is when you have a small nonprofit and you get audited, almost every small nonprofit is going to get dinged because the auditor has to list it. Rarely do they have any fixes for it. They say there's not enough hands on the money that goes from, you know, picking. Oftentimes it's the president that goes to the bank. He picks up the checks. He gets the checks. He endorses the checks. He deposits the checks. Well, and he may have the best intention. I would say the vast majority of the time they do. But it's ripe for corruption in that if people send a cash donation or somebody takes one or two checks and all of a sudden slides it into their personal account, I will tell you one of the biggest mistakes I ever made was I gave the bookkeeper access to a credit card. And the bookkeeper was checking everybody else's credit card, but I was supposed to be checking the bookkeeper's credit card. And I was not doing a good job with that. And so it was just a couple of charges. It wasn't a big deal, but it was a lesson learned for me that I was like, wait a minute, the person primarily responsible for handling the money, the incoming of the money and annotating that shouldn't actually have their hands on the account or have access to the account, because that needs to be a safeguard.
I know people are sitting there saying that's horrible, that's corrupt, I would never do that with my company. I'm telling you, it's part, I've been part of a non-for-profit. It's part human nature to feel like I'm bringing in all this money for this wonderful organization. 93% of the money is going back out in the area. We're making differences in our community. So why shouldn't I be able to go out and buy a nice dinner for me and my staff? Spend $1,000, or, you know, I wasn't keeping track, but I am going to the beach this weekend, and I'm going to be doing a couple of them. That's a lot of people like to write off their trips, right? I'm going to the beach. I'm going to do a little business so I can write off all my gasoline. I mean, it's just human nature to think that if you're giving back to a community, and because of you and because of your organization, you deserve to have some of those things. And I always say, man, if you ever say to yourself, I deserve this, you're probably in some trouble. Man.
Well, and again, because you don't know what's going on in somebody's life, if they have a real need. And so lots of times what you'll see is somebody will do something like real small, and then they say, does anybody catch it? Because if they only do it one time, people can say, oh, I'm sorry, I made a mistake.
Yep.
But they do it and they kind of test the waters. Well, if nobody catches them, they think, okay, here's a hole in the system, mm-hmm. and I can continue to pull money. As a matter of fact, there was a woman on the news, and I forget the exact location, that was just arrested. They went back. She had stolen accumulatively $360,000. And from just pulling a little bit at a time, you know, over the course of many, many years. And they had to go back and audit everything in the past when they, you know, because eventually it gets to the point where it can't be missed. You're like, something's not right. But in small nonprofits, you have to really build in those systems because there's just not enough people. Sometimes you'll have a nonprofit that has three employees and you don't have different hands. Like one person go get the mail, one person to get the checks, another person to deposit the checks. You just don't have enough hands. It's good practice, but sometimes it's just not practical.
All right. We've already gone 30 minutes. You want to go one more question? We have a bonus question.
Yeah,
you ready?
Absolutely.
Lynette, yep. Lynette in Birmingham. This is good too. She said, I've heard about your board members, the fact that you need to have an odd number. She said she wants to bring in 5 board members for her non-for-profit. She said, how important is it to not only have that odd number, but also to have a mixture of men and women? I guess it would depend on, I mean, when you did Jimmy Hell Mission, it was a men's center. Was it important that you had male board members? Does it depend on what, I guess, what your non-for-profit is, whether you have male or female, or do you always want to have 3-2, 2-3, or is it okay to have all males or all females?
Yeah, so I come from the idea that diversity is very important. But when you talk about diversity, there's several different aspects. Don't get caught up only in racial diversity, because we tend as a society to think, diversity is black and white and Hispanic and Asian or whatever, just all by what we look like. But I like diversity of experience. If I'm going to be running a business, you know, I want the perspective of somebody who has run their own business and they understand the risk associated with it. They understand the challenges associated with it, that they have managed staff. You want somebody on your board that actually has to oversee supervising people. You want people who have connections, who have affluence and influence, who can open up doors and help you on the fundraising. People that when you have problems inside of your organization that you can turn to, that's what the board is there for, that you can turn to and say, hey, I know you've experienced this before. Can you help me navigate this space? The worst thing in the world is to have board members that you go to and like, I would never go to you for anything. I mean, you don't have any experience. You don't have any wisdom. You have not been through things that I've been, you know? And so that person doesn't have any affluence or influence in the community. So you want people who have financial means. That's important, but not everybody's going to have financial means, but they bring other things to the table. So some people can write you a big check. Some people can open up the doors to people who can write big checks and use their name and their relationships. And that's the influence part. But you may have people who used to be an executive director for a successful nonprofit and they're bringing expertise in. So you just want to make sure that the person you're bringing in, that you identify why are you asking that person to be on the board? Is it because they have influence in the community? That's a good reason. Is it because they can financially support you and sometimes fill in the gaps especially as you're building and growing? Absolutely. That's a good reason. But somebody with leadership experience and especially nonprofit experience that can help answer questions for you and take you out to lunch and just, you know, have those chats. That's a special thing. So yeah, I would be very targeted and very specific as to who I brought on my board.
All right, there he is, Michael Coleman with Mission Minded. Keep your mind, your mission, your mind. Do it every single week. You hear live shows right here on Tony Curry Radio on the Tony Curry Radio app. Download that, be part of tens of thousands of people that already done that. You can hear the show live at noon and 7 every Wednesday, and then go to Spotify and go back and listen to all the previous episodes. We have well over 100 different shows up there, everything from Adapter Paris to Dark Side of the Pooch to Live Wire Wednesday, which comes up after Mission Minded. Win in Rome with Stuart Rome. We have Blues Almighty. We have the Damon Johnson Show. Show. Great shows. Check it out. And check out our umbrella of wonderful shows with Mission Minded. Michael, until next week, continue to send those emails. Go to TonyCurryRadio.net. That's TonyCurryRadio, Curry with a K, .net. And leave your emails, and we'll get to them next week. And, Michael, thank you so much, man. I appreciate you.
Hey, I really enjoyed it.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.